Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to GVN's Talking Comics interview. On today's show, we welcome talented writer James Maddox and artist Gavin Smith, creators of the comic series Dead Legends for publisher A Wave Blue World. Here's your host, Martin Sexton.
Welcome once again to another edition of GVN's Talking Comics. I'm your host, Martin, and today we have the pleasure of talking to not one, but two great creators for a series that actually I was just introduced to, which is called Dead Legends, and it's a martial arts-based series that kicks all kinds of ass, actually they're getting ready to start their second volume for Wave Blue World, and we're going to be talking to James Maddox, the writer, and also to Gavin Smith, the artist for this thing. So let's welcome them to GVN's Talking Comics. How you doing, guys?
Great.
Doing well. Thanks for having us. Yeah.
All right. So let's start out with a bit of history, since our followers may not be familiar. Okay, starting with you, James. When did you take an interest in writing comics specifically? And what were some of the comics you read that steered you in that direction?
I've always been a storyteller. I won second place in my middle school's excellent fiction contest. I carry that around with me as a point of pride. But I had written a number of short stories and like novels, and had a friend ask if I could write a comic script. So I tried it out, and it seemed to be pretty fun. So I kept at it, and now here I am with all kinds of fun stories under my belt. As far as like what got me into comics, I'm definitely of the era that like Brian Michael Bendis was doing like crime graphic novels and stuff like that with Image. So like Goldfish and pretty much anything by Neil Gaiman with like murder mysteries and Sandman and all that. Like, I like the metaphysical stuff. I like the crime stuff. Like, that's what really kind of pushed me in my storytelling.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so Gavin, what got you started in art and doing comics specifically?
It's funny that James said he got his second place, was it? You said, right, in the running contest. I was selected in elementary school as an alternate for the school art club. And I took that personally. So I went and made a career out of it. I've always been drawing since I was a kid, and I've been collecting comics. So I think I was always reading like Batman, Superman. I remember really getting into Grant Morrison's Justice League. That really hooked me as a kid. And then from there, I was just all in. And then I ventured into reading a lot of Vertigo, Hellblazer and We Three and Preacher and all sorts of stuff like that along those lines. And in 2008, I applied and I got accepted to the Joe Kubert School, and then I graduated in 2011, and ever since then I've been making my own comics.
James, some of your earlier works kind of leaned more toward the horror genre. Was that something that you actually enjoyed writing and went, it was going to stick with that, or did was it because you had some success with it and you just kind of wanted to keep with what worked?
I don't know. Like, I definitely love the horror genre. I'm a huge like Twilight Zone fan. So most of the early stuff I did had roots with the Twilight Zone kind of like aesthetic. And then by the time I was doing like Metaphorical Hers, like a punk rock poetry kind of series. So, and you know, Dead Legends is a martial arts series. So I've tried to keep it varied as much as possible, just because I get bored doing the same thing over and over again, right? But like,
right.
It seems to me that if I can vary up my genres and vary up my approaches, that it not only keeps things fresh for me, but I hopefully keeps it fresh for the readers as well.
So exactly how did you get connected with Gavin as far as for this project?
Well, Gavin and I have been friends for years and years, almost a decade. Yeah,
about after I graduated from Kubert School and started hitting conventions, we met fairly quickly. Like one of the few shows that at the time it was like 2 hours from where he lived, 2 hours from where I lived. We ended up meeting in the middle at the show in Dayton and became friends there.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't get rid of him.
Talked about like going a series or a project together. It was just kind of like waiting for his schedule to clear up and finding the right, you know, topic to kind of tackle together. Because I think I can write anything, and maybe that's egotistical of me, but I really do. So I kept asking him, like, what would you like to work on if you could work on anything in the world, you know? And he said he wanted to do like a fight book. And I had enough kind of hubris to kind of take that on. So
yeah,
hopefully I didn't mess it up.
well, it's kind of funny because I've talked to a number of different artists, especially in your writing combination, and that always seems to be the way how it works. Is they'll ask the artist, what do you want to, you know, what do you like to draw, and they'll kind of say, well, I'll lean to whatever it is you'd like to draw. I'll write about that. Whether they actually like that subject or not, they seem to just dive right in. And almost everyone I've ever seen has been, they've been great. So
I feel it makes for a pretty good collaboration in that sense. You know, in that case, when an artist comes to you and asks you specifically like what you want to draw, it feels better to be included in the process rather than here's this, draw it. And we definitely came up with this. I think with Dead Legends, it's the purest form of collaboration I've ever been a part of, because from the beginning, we started talking about this at another convention, and was it Louisville, I think?
Where yeah, it was Louisville.
I was working on commissions, he came to my room, and he asked me that, and I told him I wanted to do this, you know, fight book, martial arts book, and we started talking about it, and then we just started bouncing, and we do this every time we get together, we just start bouncing ideas off each other. And we probably have like 15, 20 stories that we'll probably never tell because it's just so many things that we come up with together. Yeah. But working with James is very collaborative that way.
Right. And actually, you know, when I first started doing this gig, I thought that's how it worked for everybody. I thought, you know, they all work closely together. And I found out as I went, not always the case. Sometimes the writer never meets the artist, and basically, as you said, they just like send them the script and here, draw this.
Right.
And to me, that sounds like a really hard row to hoe. Really.
Well, it's definitely like, I don't know if it's a more streamlined approach, because like you don't know who you're working with at that point. Like, there's a lot of variables that could pop up. I mean, granted, if it's just for like the paycheck and there's that guaranteed income coming through, maybe that is the only incentive that you need to finish the book. But for essentially every story that I've worked on, it's been a real like collaboration with a friend, you know? And I like that. It's more personal. It's more investing for me, at least. And whether or not like, I feel like I have somebody watching my back, because if I write a bad scene or, you know, something's not quite right, someone that's just there for the check will be like, yep, okay, I'll draw it. And that's it, you know, but you know, Gavin will be like, what if we did it like this? And I'd be like, yay!
I think the best instance of this is when we were putting the pitch together for Dead Legends, which was basically like an 8-page fight scene. James was like plotting it out, and I was like, oh, no, let me. We've come to a point where when we get to fight scenes, it's, hey, these are the beats I need you to hit, but you fill in the blanks. Like, you've got this from here, because he trusts me enough to kind of just handle the fight scenes and let me do my thing and make it make sense.
Yeah, I think in the latest script that I just turned over, there's like a 3-page fight scene, and it's just like, page one, Gavin, do your thing. Make sure this happens.
Yeah.
Okay, now speaking of Dead Legends, one of the things that really pulled me into the book is I'm a giant fan of badass women, and you had two of them in Dead Legends. So exactly how did you develop those characters? Because like I said, they kicked all kinds of ass in that first volume.
Yeah, I think part of that process was when I came to James, I had an idea for the main bad guy and the main character, then James came up with all these other layers. So I think I came up with one woman, he came up with the other woman.
I think you had Red Death like pretty well set.
I don't remember that one. I feel like you came up with Red Death.
That's interesting. I always had it in my head that I came up with Jan after you showed up at my house with Enter the Dragon.
Right.
And we watched it, and I was like, oh, the sister in that would be totally dope for like the Jan character. And then I thought you had already been drawing Red Death.
No, I don't think so. I think you came up with her.
Oh, well,
I could swear. I think it was a kind of a, it might be something that I love that we're trying to figure this out on your show.
That's cool.
I feel like maybe we had them combined and then we decided it was best to split them up.
Maybe.
Split up the different parts of the personality. They were just one character. This is good. There's no argument. Just kind of organically came up.
I mean, it happened. But yeah,
I can't help you.
We knew that we wanted a diverse like number of characters. Mm-hmm. We were interested in telling the story. Jan's story specifically was like a revenge story from the get go. So we kind of knew that we had to have her character set. It was just finding her personality type, you know?
Right.
So everything just kind of came together in service of the story, I believe.
Okay, now I know I'm kind of spoiling the original volume, but I was curious, you really didn't show the fight between Yin and Red Death. Were you planning on doing it and then decided against it? Or what was the dynamic of kind of, in a sense, skipping that and just coming to the conclusion of what happened at the end of that fight?
I think with that fight, it doesn't really... There was really no motivation for, or I guess I'd rather say there's an evolution of Red Death's character that she didn't need to win the fight. Right. And definitely the progression of Yan's that she definitely needed to win the fight. So we kind of have it as Jan in theory wins the fight, but it's never really concluded that way. And it doesn't really necessarily need for those two to find out who's better.
Right.
For now. Uh-oh.
That sounds like
Okay. So the main goal is, you know, get to Blind Tiger. And Red Death doesn't need to get to Blind Tiger necessarily. So I think we did that on purpose.
Like I said, the fight scenes were great. Like I said, I know at least three or four times in the middle of certain fights, I'm sitting there wincing because they just look painful. Like I said, arms and legs aren't meant to bend that way. And apparently breaking people's necks is the preferred method of killing lots of folks.
That's a big trope, like in martial arts movies, that I just kind of adopted. I was like, yeah, breaking necks.
Okay. Chuck Norris, Van Damme style. So we're sitting there talking about this, those followers who haven't actually, you know, read the book yet, and they should. Can you give us kind of just a brief description of exactly what happens in volume one as we lead up to volume two?
Okay. How spoilery do we want to go, Gavin?
I'll leave it I don't think we want to go crazy spoiler, because I actually would love for people to read.
Okay.
But they also, you know, in the event they don't get to book volume one and jump right into volume two, they kind of need to know where they're going.
The gist that I have down that when I'm, you know, at a convention table selling the book is a woman, Yam, enters a martial arts tournament to get revenge against the guy who killed her husband. That guy being Blind Tiger, but she can't just straight up kill him. She has to enter the tournament that her husband was supposed to be part of to get to him, and she has to run the brackets. But during the course of the tournament, she finds out she's a couple months pregnant with her dead husband's kid. So now she's fighting for two.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
There you go. Reader's Digest version. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see, James, when you first started out, you were going the self-publishing route. And you were doing it back when, you know, it's a pretty common thing these days, but it wasn't probably as common back when you first started. How big of a problem was doing that, and how much easier is it now that you're working for publishers like Wave Blue World?
Well, it's so Jen Hickman and I like put out The Dead as a self-published book, and that was a pretty hefty endeavor for a self-published because it was like 6 issues. We did everything pretty much in-house, with Jen doing the art and the colors, and I did the lettering and the story. And it was a lot. Right. But at the end of the day, we had, a book that we could show off and something to prove that we could actually hit the deadline and show the work. And with like the work that I've done with, Broken Icon Comics and like a few other things that are kind of in the smaller range that are like anywhere from 20 to 60 pages. It's always good to kind of start out small, I've discovered, when you're going a self-publishing route, because it A is less time consuming and it's more cost effective, and you can tell a really good story with a smaller page count, you know, despite what you may think when you're starting out. You might think that you need a grand opus of, you know, books to tell like a decent story, but that's not the truth. Like you can tell a short story and put that out on a table or put it out online and just show, you know, people that you got it. You can have them download it for free if you wanted to, just to kind of do a proof of concept kind of approach to comics. So, you know, it's definitely the way to go as far as I'm concerned. But on top of that, working with other publishers, self-publishing, if you're, you know, good at it, can instill certain things in you, like hitting your deadlines, because you have to come up with your own deadlines, right? It can make you cognizant of like the different factors that go into comics, be it editing, lettering, scripting, art, all the colors, just the whole thing. Like if you have ultimate responsibility for either doing or gathering up those elements for the comic, you have a better appreciation for it going forward with, you know, your for hire work or whatever like that. So you're not taking advantage of your letterer by writing a novel on a page, because you've talked to a letterer and hopefully if they're good, they're like, you can't do this. You can't have 70 balloons on this page. Okay? I've been super lucky with the people or the companies that I've worked for, like Webtoon and Away to the World primarily. I've had pretty much creative freedom. Tyler has been really, really great about letting us kind of tell
do
the story.
Do our thing, yeah.
You know, and that's, I don't know if it's super rare, but like it's nice to have at this point.
Yeah, I think it's really nice. Tyler just kind of trusts us as storytellers. He kind of, you know, I think James and I both kind of got started in self-publishing. So, and Tyler, Away Blue World was founded on self-publishing.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of like-minded people coming together that all know how to work within those same boundaries. But now that Tyler's grown Away Blue World, he still has that very DIY sensibility, and I think James and I both do as well. We're both guys that we're also in bands too, so we know how to collaborate. Yeah. We know how to get things done and do it ourselves, and this whole process doesn't feel like that far off from self-publishing, minus, you know, we don't have to deal with like the little stuff, which is nice. Like we could just focus on making the book,
right,
which is great.
All right. Okay. Now, as I'm sitting here watching you draw, I said, you do traditional drawing, but you don't do the digital.
No. Yeah. I draw on paper. My process is I draw on scrap computer paper and then I scan it in and print it out onto Bristol board and blue line. And then I ink over that. And then I'll do some digital touch ups here and there. And like every once in a while, if I mess something up, I'll fix it digitally. But yeah, for the and all our coloring is done digitally. But yeah, everything I like pen and paper, and yeah, I like feeling the paper.
You know, you're talking about inking your work. That's kind of becoming kind of more of a lost art, because it seems like more artists are actually doing their own inking. Back in the 70s, when I was reading comics, you always had a separate penciler and a separate inker and a little bit separate everything. But it seems like most artists these days are doing their own inking.
Yeah, it's interesting because back when I was a student at Joe Kubert School, I don't know if it was always a goal for a lot of the people that were in my class, but it was always a goal for me that I wanted to pencil and ink myself, because I like my pencils just fine. I've had only a couple of times where I really liked it, but for the most part, I don't really like when other people ink me. Mostly because I'm trying to think of a good analogy here. I feel like it's only half the story whenever I'm just penciling it, because there's a lot of textures and things that I do on the page that I don't think translates well to pencil. But like if I can put it down in rough pencil, it's like, okay, I can make that line in ink, but I can't do that with pencil. So, I prefer to ink myself. And then I think over time, the industry has just evolved, especially with a lot more people going digitally, where the programs are basically inking programs. Yeah. So like that turning in those pages are inked files. So there's not really a need for an inker. I still know a couple people that use an inker. I mean, we're both friends with Jay Leaston and Jonathan Glapian, who are traditional inkers. And they, you know, still getting pretty good work here and there. But yeah, like I've always preferred to ink myself. I don't know why. I feel like it doesn't translate well to other people, and I don't want to, I feel like too much of a backseat driver if I have to.
Well, I know, you know, I'm a big fan of John Buscema,
That'd be something.
He pretty much didn't like anybody who did his inks. He preferred to do it himself, but of course, you know, just production wise and everything, you had to rely on whoever inked it. I think he tolerated his brother, Sal, I think Neil Adams inked him for a bit, but yeah, he just never liked hardly what anybody did for him. And what he was afraid of is that, especially someone who's heavy handed, it suddenly doesn't look like John Buscema's work. It looks like whoever the inkers
were. Sure. Right. Yeah. Like Vinnie Kaluta or something like that.
Okay. Well, I said, I wasn't even thinking about bringing that up, but since I was sitting there watching.
Yeah, right. I'm just kind of noodle here and there.
Okay. That's about really all I have. Oh, one other thing. As far as for volume two, can you give us any kind of hint of what? You already gave me one, I'm thinking.
Yeah. That
might be for something even further down the line. that one hint I gave you.
Yeah.
So volume one was our revenge story. Volume two is very much like there's a lot of road tripping. There's a lot of like being chased by the elements of organization that is Dead Legends. So it's you get to
run.
Yeah, it's the gang on the run, essentially. So you get to be introduced to Jan's daughter and see how that whole dynamic like changes the whole situation within the group. It's probably one of the crazier things that we've entered into because there's explosions, there's motorcycles, games, there's all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah, there's betrayal and a little bit of heartbreak. Is there heartbreak? There's kind of some heartbreak. There's a dead dog in there somewhere.
Oh no.
Let's see. Moral corruption. There's societal political corruption. Yeah, there's a lot of
like regular
of
life stuff.
Yeah, we touch on a lot of things.
Well, and it's interesting because like Dead Legends 1 had the tournament aspect, and I gave little drops and hints that it is a somewhat a shadow government in itself. Like the people that run the organization to bring in the best fighters in the world go on to use those fighters to do some interesting things in the world at large, right? And then in volume two, you get to see a little bit more of that in action, right?
Yeah.
And you get to see a lot more of how the corruption in Dead Legends is ultimately leading it or leaving it vulnerable to like revolutionary thought. So it's like I don't know, it's a window into the world building that you get to see more of it expand in this volume, and also get to see what's going on with our crew as characters and how they react to that world.
I appreciate it. Okay, so before I let you guys go, I know you're kind of knee deep in this, but did you have any other projects that you wanted to talk about that you may have coming up? I'll start with you, James.
I don't think we can talk about.
No, come on.
Right now, the only thing that I know I can talk about for sure is I have a number of short stories and a bunch of anthologies. So like the You Died anthology, there's, I think it's like C is for Cthulhu. I got a short story coming up in that. The Help anthology. What was and the Tales from the Quarantine anthology?
Oh yeah, we did a thing for that.
Yeah,
we did a one page story.
A page for that particular anthology.
I forgot about that. That was so long ago.
Like COVID had an interesting time with everybody's schedules and announcements and stuff like that. So we're still kind of feeling how that's moving.
Yeah.
But things are happening. Things are in the works.
Yeah.
Okay. So before I move on to Gavin, do you, as far as the fans want to follow you on social media, James,
where can they go?
I am James C. Maddox, everywhere.
Everywhere. Everywhere. Okay. All right. So, Gavin, since I already know that you're doing some Star Trek there, so what do you got coming up here?
So, yeah, I'm doing, as I said, Star Trek The Mirror War for IDW Publishing, which is on the cover of Previews this month, which is
wild.
I don't have one with me, I'll show it off. But yeah, so I'm working with IDW for the next year-ish. So it's a 13-issue series. There's 0 issue, 8 issues, which is the main story, and then 4 tie-in issues. I'm doing the 8, so the main series. So that'll take me through to June. That's pretty much my whole life for the next year. Besides Dead Legends 2, which is starts coming out next week, and we have started planning Volume 3 already.
Well, all right. Okay, so as far as social media for you,
Gavin P. Smith, Gavin as in Gavin P. as in Patrick Smith, and that's on Instagram, Twitter. I have a website, but I never update it. So there's anything you need to know from me, Twitter, Instagram, or you know. Also, I do a Twitch stream with a lot of my friends. Every Thursday night at 8 p.m. It's on Sue Lee's Twitch channel, twitch.tv/SueLeeDraws. It's myself, Sue, Josh Hickson, Tyler Boss, Tom Riley, Craig Cermak, Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, Adam Gorham, and then we have like a bunch of other guests come on, like Sweeney Boo is a big guest that comes on. James comes on sometimes. Ramon Villalobos. Like, there's 8 of us that are the main people, and we just kind of goof off and draw stuff.
Yes, yeah, I've actually jumped on there a few times to watch.
Because I
talked to Sue when she was doing a book for Ahoy. And yes. As I say, and I've pretty much been following her since. So cool. All right.
So that's all I got for you guys. And we'll be following Dead Legends Volume 2 very closely. And I'll be getting back with you, Gavin, for Star Trek.
Yes, for sure.
And we hopefully connect with you again real soon.
Excellent.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to GVN's Talking Comics. Please come back again. Talking Comics is a production of Geek Vibes Nation.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.